Good evening, ladies and gents.
What's good, people?
It's Reg.
It's Stone.
And we are here right now in our finest of suits, you know, H&M quality, you know what I'm saying? You can feel the polyester sheen. You know, my pleather boots are fucking pleathering. You know, Chelsea, of course, you know, because we're men of fashion, men of style. And then with this podcast, we're beginning, you know, what we, you know, what you have been waiting for, our top 10 list. Yes. These are the albums that, if you missed this year, you need to go back and listen to. These are the albums that will absolutely not change your life because we're already too far gone for that, but they might make your day.
I can't follow that up, but...
A little negativity, a little positivity.
Yeah,
we're still doomed.
I was like, wow,
but we got music.
That was positive. That was rational.
But yeah, you know, as usual, around this time, you have 1,001 top 10 lists, and we have to bring you our own. And, you know, it's a celebration of music, man. You know, it feels like the only top 10 list is a top 10 list in your mind.
Mm. It is the list of friends we made along the way.
The list of friends we made. Those are the ones.
Oh, man. All right. Well, let's kick this off because we got some choices on here.
We got some choices. So we'll go tit for tat. We'll do the whole boxing style.
Yeah, tit for tat.
All right. I'm gonna throw one, which I think, you know, is going to make a lot of lists this year. I don't think it's going to necessarily make a number one, but it was a great left field album. JPEG Mafia, Danny Brown's Garing the Hose, Volume 1. I think with this album, you know, for the most part, and you know, what makes this album great, I could put it to you this way. I'll start off from the very simple fact of where Danny Brown isn't in peak form. You can kind of tell he's a little bit alcoholic. You know, you can kind of tell it's a little bit unhinged. But the thing is, for this album, it worked. I think with JPEG Mafia, it's really more of a showcase of his production. You know, beats are corrupted. You know, he flips in sync and it kind of makes this weird fucking almost echo sound to it. There's times where intentionally sound-wise, it's fuck-ups, where the beat drops out, drops back in, but not in a cool way, almost like the tape fucked up kind of way. And also, like, you know, to a certain extent, it's weirdly mastered where the beats are louder than JPEG and definitely Danny Brown. But I think it kind of works together. I think it's an album of where, and I can't remember, it was another artist I was reading about where they were basically talking about artists and they were talking about Bomb Squad. And not to say they compared to this, but it kind of segued into this album where what's cool about this album is the fact of where it's creating an insular world and it's just them kind of just going a little bit nuts. But it's also not really concerned with the normal things you would expect. You know, it's not trying to break the algorithm. It's not necessarily rapidy rap. Sometimes the song just kind of goes and stops suddenly. It's just like chaos in the box. And I think what's cool about it is the idea of where it kind of exemplifies what underground hip hop should be. And what I mean by that is the fact of even now, while the concept of underground is kind of dead, there was always a kind of ethos of where, you know, you either do rapidy rap, you do trap, you do XYZ. And this album is just bonkers. You know what I'm saying? For the most part, it's just things make no sense. Things kind of come in and come out. And then these are artists who, by this time, JPEG Mafia is the angry rapper. Danny Brown is the fucking party rapper. They kind of intersect. They both use beats a little bit more experimental. This has been very, very, very fucking easy to kind of hone it, to like phone it in and to have a solid album that sold, you know, good amount of, you know, underground records. But this is completely batshit insane. And it's, as a result, like, you know, for me, it may not be the best record of the year, but definitely, like, when I listen to it, I hear new things. It's a refreshing listen all around.
Yeah. And this did not make my list, but I'm not mad at it. I think that these are two rappers who I think naturally should be together. I feel like they complement each other very well. I think JPEG Mafia's beats are a little frantic. and you know, Danny Brown's rapping is also a little frantic, so I think in that regard, I think it was just like a perfect marriage. So you know, I'm not really a fan of both of them, to be honest, and I'm sorry, I'm gonna duck and look around
the corner.
But I admire the both of them. I admire Danny Brown. I admire JPEG Mafia. You know, I think like what they're doing is, you know, new, different, unique, and they're able to kind of build careers off of that. So, you know, it's a great project, but, you know, it definitely was not a project I went back to, but I'm not in the target demo, I don't think. But, you know, I admire the album. And again, it's just like, it's really cool to kind of see two creative people come together. It's definitely a perfect marriage.
Yeah, no. Again, like I said, I think just for, you know, again, that's what I said, is like, you know, it's weird to have like a rap album where I'm like, the rapping isn't the best, but but it's so like the ingenuity is off the chain and everything kind of doing of the samples and just the ideas that's thrown back and forth. And like they fucking sampled Kingdom Hearts, I think. It was yeah. They have some crazy sample in there where it's like almost like this crazy obscene anime, you know, OD hyperpop stuff. So it's just like you really can't front on like an album that, you know, you can see they put a lot of fucking creativity into it. So, you know,
yeah.
Like I can't really, you know, definitely like as just for that, it's worth the listen, even though it might necessarily be the greatest rappers on it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. All right, so I'm going to say my list is probably not in any particular order. However, I'm going to start with this because I think this is also a very interesting and creative choice made by a rapper this year. And it's not the only creative choice made by a rapper this year.
Yeah, agreed.
And I'm talking about Lil Yachty. Let's start here. I played this album out. And I think it's not because of Lil Yachty. It's the choices he made in production, right? So you got, like, you know, East Two Morris producer. You got, you know, Unknown Memorial Orchestra. And he put together this album that I thought was, like, really interesting, really unique. You could tell he's been listening to a lot of these artists, you know, listening to, you know, like, Toro Mi Moi, like, things like that. And he put together this really cool album. And he kind of is the weakest link, but he's not as bad as I think people were expecting, you know, like obviously he's not a singer. He's not, you know, on the level of some of these other artists that he emulates, but you know, it didn't feel like cosplay, right? It felt like fairly authentic. And I thought the production on this album was just incredible. For somebody who, again, we you know, trap rapper, quote unquote, SoundCloud rapper, blah blah blah, like, you know, like buys beats off of YouTube or something like that. I think you could kind of tell he put his heart and soul into this project and wanted to do something different. And I think like he hit the mark on a lot of places. And I just really. And I think this album is made, you know, I'm in the target demo. I like all the people who worked on this album, you know, except Lil Yachty. And he, like, Lil Yachty's like, oh no, you're going to like me too. And he made that happen.
He's like, untapped markets. Mortal Orchestra fans need me.
You know, the data scientists at Quality Control were like, how can we extend our market share? And they got it. They got it.
He so, was like, what's my Spotify KPIs? What's happening here? What is this gap on the chart, huh? The indie kids? I want to Tame Impala dudes next year. You need to fix this algo.
Like, they had like a little, like, all the plays on the map, and there's a big hole in Brooklyn. And they're like, no, we got something for you. So yeah, I mean, I think that this is a great album. There's a lot of people who are just like, they, every time I mention this album, they're all shocked. And I'm like, no, press play, go listen to it. If you're like listening to this podcast and you kind of like know the music that we like, I think you will like it too.
Yeah, no, it's all right. So I can tell you, so my favorite thing, you know, obviously I read like the big top tens, but my favorite, and Brooklyn Vegan does a really good job of it, is where basically for like the month of December, if you've got anything you're trying to promote, they don't really care about your press release. They're like, just give us your top 10, right? Just, that's all we ask. So as a result, you know, between social media, places like that, I see a lot of like artist top 10. And then what's cool about that is a lot of them pick up their, you know, more obscure bands, their friends' bands. So it's always an interesting listen. But the interesting thing is, and I'm saying is like excessively, But definitely for a serious musician, you know, classically trained in XYZ, Lil Yachty's popped up more than you would expect in these fucking lists. And that's the thing, is at the end of the day, and I even go back to like what my thing about Danny Brown, where they aren't at their rapper's best. This is the idea of where I think to a certain extent, and you know, I hate poo-pooing on modern music because there's a potpourri of music out there, but I think that we're excited for new different things from like left field, and that's what Yachty did here. And the thing is, he did it at a really good level. Like, there's nothing here where it sounds like, you know, at the same, you know, I'll put it to you this way. Lil Wayne Rebirth.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I think people have really low expectations.
Yeah, and the thing is, at a certain point, it's very easy to hear like, oh, you know, I'm gonna do some rapper shit. I mean, I'm a rapper, but I'm gonna do some rock and roll shit. And then, you know, they hire like fucking the most terrible bar band to make the most generic Limp Bizkit riffs.
Yeah.
But like, he really put effort into it. You could tell he liked the genre, like you said. He really wanted to make a good album. You know, again, he is the weakest link, but for what he hit, is just like, I don't think anybody thought he had it in him. So like, you know, like fucking awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I guess mine is all right. So this is the Williamsburg circa 2010 section of my list. I threw in two bands. Both of them are guitar based. Both of them would definitely have been in like Glasslands, 285 Kent, you know, Death by Audio. But that's not to say that they're like a nostalgia band, like the Dare. They're just, you know, they're finding new ways to kind of play with that paradigm. I think, so, you know, to a certain extent, you know, as music kind of gets flatter, we're going to hear different interpretations of different genres of different things, right? So we've got two bands, Model Like Trees and Mandy, Indiana. Model Like Trees, they're Berklee School of Music kids. They basically like, you know, they met up for Poet. They do what I would almost describe to you as a noise techno kind of thing, where at times it might sound like literally something you would have seen in fucking like Pitchfork, maybe like 15, 10 years ago. But then also sometimes it's just a straight techno groove. And, you know, when you kind of see them live, they're all doing it through traditional instrumentation. There's no weird fucking drum machine. It's just all live. On a flip side, you've got a band called Mandy Indiana. Also a band that's been around for a little seconds. In their case, they kind of hit that kind of same kind of thing where it's definitely dance-based. It's definitely something more experimental. But because their focus is a little bit on more, like, let's say, what's happening in the world, a little bit more militancy, a little bit about feminism. They've got a female lead singer who's kind of a monster because she's just a monster. And so you kind of have these guys kind of achieving the same thing of, like, how do we take guitar rock music but make it dancey, but don't make it, like, dance punk, which is kind of, like, you could kind of tell with the Orient that's where they both kind of came, that Williamsburg sound. And both these records are just fantastic where, you know, they just kind of hit you as far as the sounds are concerned. You know, things get really weird. Like, with Model Like Trees, it's almost like there's this almost, like, fight or fuck thing happening where the lead singer is an openly gay man who, at least from what I've read a little bit, kind of recently discovered sexuality. So a lot of it is just blatantly about fucking, but then a lot of it is so aggressive and weird it could be blatantly about fighting at the same time too, or at the same time, who knows? Maybe you're into that. And like Mandy Indiana, even though, you know, for the most part they come from a, almost like a almost a cooler or less, like, you know, it's almost like I'll say Interpol-y era sound of it, where it's very polished and kind of cool. Even then, it's a little dangerous because, like, these, like, there's a sound they hit on there, a song called Plinking Shears, where it sounds like an amp dying and it just kind of repeats suddenly. Because, you know, before it's a little, you know, little happy, cumbos dancey song, you know, something that could almost be in a car commercial. And then this sound just comes in that has to be like looped and it sounds like fucking like an amp dying. And like, again, it's interesting where they kind of both achieve this four on the floor dance punk thing, but totally not dance punk. It's uncomfortable, it's new, it's different. And, you know, props to both of them.
That's what's up. All right, so next one for me, another controversial take, but I'm going to own it. Andre 2000, New Blue Sun.
Bruh, that's another one. All these little too holy and thou serious artists, classically trained. They're like, yo, Andre did that on these little artist lists, so I can't be mad.
Yeah, you know, I think that. And it's weird too, because, like, you know, I've been trying to say, oh, if it wasn't Andre 3000, people would actually dig this album. But I don't think that's the case, right? I think, like, you needed Andre 3000 to make this album work, because
yeah,
it's again, it's not about him and him being a rapper. It's about the mood that he's trying to set. And once I kind of like got like over the fact that there probably will never be a 160,000 rap album, I was kind of like, I felt myself playing this album, you know, while I was working during stressful days. You know, me and my wife, like, we're driving, we play it in the background, just having a conversation, playing it while you're going to sleep. Like, I don't know. Like, I kind of felt like this album became kind of the soundtrack to a lot of points in my life once it released. And I think it's just because it wasn't the fact that it was like an Andre 3000 album. It was more just the fact that it was, you know, a purpose. Like, the album had a purpose, right? The album is supposed to be calming, supposed to be zen. It's supposed to be, you know, like, you kind of trying to like, block out the world, things like that. And once you kind of realize the purpose, it's like, oh, this is great, right? And it's not Agreed. Trying to do any crazy shit. You know, like, it's literally just like, this guy has a flu album. And this guy is making something that's like super melodic. It's really funny because I saw it in the jazz playlist on Spotify. It's like, it's not jazz, like spa music, you know. But I think, to be honest, there's me and a lot of people who I've been talking to and seeing online. It's like, as Black people, we need this shit, right? Like we shouldn't, you know, this shouldn't be like, you know, like, I don't know, like, just in the new age category or something like that. Like, this is actually something that can improve your life. And that's kind of how I felt about this album. So, yeah, you know, like, shouts to Andre 3000. We're never going to get a hip-hop album. And that's okay.
Yeah, no, it's a wrap. But, I think what's kind of cool about this is the idea of where, and I think we could all share, you know, because what was cool is this was also weirdly guerrilla marketed, because it's like nobody knew anything. Then like a week before it came out, he's like everywhere, like showing up. And the thing is, like, I think that, you know, at least from my perspective, I was afraid it was going to be a terrible album. I'm afraid it's going to be like this noodling and, you know, just like this really, really extremely free jazz and this off-kilter stuff. And, you know, this not to say weirdness, but like different for the sake of difference. And I'm going to say it's going to sound like a diss, but it's not. It's a fantastic lo-fi hip-hop album. And it's the idea of where, like you said, it's about the vibe where, and again, it's because the thing is, this melody here, this stuff here where I could imagine something, and they have sampled it. I could imagine somebody hearing like a flute riff and just basically putting guitars on it, playing the keyboards, So the thing is, there is actual musical effort here. It's not just him doing free jazz. And the thing that's cool about it is the idea of where, as a result, it's like, it's a really, going back to Yachty, it's like, for what he was going for, it's extremely well made. Like, there's nothing here that doesn't sound unprofessional. Back to your point, it's like, if it was just dropped and it was on some shit where it's like, you know, Shabaka Hutchins, like, I'm doing this fucking record, you know, we wouldn't question it at all. And it's the idea of where, you know, I respect it because at least when I read the article, he's like, I'm doing all this press, not because of money, but I feel like people need to hear this album. And like, back to your point, it's true. It's to a certain extent, it reminds me of, like, you know, your Alice Coltrane. You had a lot of like jazz and R&B dudes in the 70s doing things that are as trippy. You had fucking, you know, come on, man. You had Stevie Wonder fucking, what was it, Plant album? Plant Life? What was it? Help me with this.
Secret Life of Plants.
Secret Life of Plants. Come on, bro.
Yeah. Same energy.
Yeah. So that's the thing. So to a certain extent, right, ready for this? It is still Black music. Once again, the white man has told from us, new age sound, we were doing the free jazz, and they came, remarketed, put a little Erewhon on there, a little Erewhon $20 fucking milkshake, and now it's fucking ambient, you know what I'm saying? But no, like I said, it's for what he was doing, it's a really good album, and the thing is, I can't really be mad at it, because yeah, you know, and again, it is my cup of tea, but even if it's not, I don't think anybody can listen to it and be like, oh, he was just noodling. This motherfucker put effort. You could just tell that this is not him, like, all right, I got a recorder in the mail, I'll get some jazz cats. I'll noodle on top of it. They'll try to catch up with me. You have like synthesizer textures. Like whatever was happening here was effort, and I can't be mad at it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. On mine, it's Mike Burning Desire. That's next on my list. I'm a huge Mike fan. I think probably the last couple of records, maybe even the last two or three, I think kind of, if it hasn't ended up on my top 10 list, probably close. I think what kind of makes this record kind of very unique is the fact of where Mike, the last couple of years, has been known as kind of almost like a morose rapper. You know, we kind of joke about Earl Sweatshirt and that kind of like genre where, you know, while you could say it's a Griselda affiliated and new boom bap, it's all kind of mired in this like, you know, malaise that we all kind of feel because the world's kind of slowly ending.
Yeah.
What I like about this record, though, is the fact of where, you know, Mike was somebody who always had multiple sides. I saw him play a set. We were just talking about Lot Radio earlier today. And maybe like a year ago, I was like, oh, he was playing a set and I listened to it. And it was all like 90s house music. And at the same time, he's somebody where he has production, where he produces for other people, and they're more upbeat, like upbeat beats. So what's cool about this record is like it's probably the first one in a minute where he's just really upbeat. You can say he's happy rapping. The beats are fantastic. It's just more of a, from not to say, I won't say it's necessarily a game changer because it's not like he's trying new flows and it's crazy production, but he's somebody where like you could see he's trying to get like, you know, he's trying to level up. He's trying to like change things around, the perception around him. He's not taking himself so seriously. The beats are fun. There's one where, just one fantastic beat where, not even the beat, it's just a song where it's a vocal loop. And he got, there's an indie rock band called Crumb. And he basically got her to vamp on top of it. And it sounds, mwah. It sounds very Andre 3000-ish. Very new age. But you don't really expect that in a rapper who's A, known for these musky, like off-kilter soul samples, and B, depression, where you have this almost angelic song. And it's kind of cool. Kind of, again, I think what's going to be a big theme, honestly, this whole podcast is like records that we expected to go one way and went the opposite way. And I think that kind of fits that to a T.
That's what's up. So my next one, I actually kind of moved this up because I want to give some shine to some underground artists on this list. So I'm going to probably mispronounce this, but Guys Guevara.
I feel like, and I knew it too. Somebody gave an interview and I was like, that's his name. And I totally forgot.
But like, the album's called Go We Are Coming. It's probably one of my favorite hip hop albums of the year. You know, if you like underground kind of like, you know, backpacker hip hop or backpacker, or, you know, or Earl Sweatshirt's doing like things like that, you'll love this album. The only problem is this guy, I don't think he's doing it for the streams. Like, you know, he has like several different names. He has like a fake bio. He says like he's a super group. Like he changes his name every album. So, like, all the metadata is screwed up on Spotify, you know. But I just think it's a really dope album. He calls himself, like, a geopolitical communist rapper, you know.
Which is a lot.
Yeah, like you know, like probably don't want to talk about this, you know, at the Christmas party. But I just was very, you know, in terms of, like, the production is really dope. Obviously... the themes and topics he's been talking about are very pertinent. And I just kind of feel like I kept going back to this album and saying like, man, this is like probably the perfect rap album, or one of the more perfect rap albums I've heard in a long time, where it's like, you have production, you have like, you're like MCing and you also have substance. I feel like, you know, you can only have like two out of the three. You know, recently, and not three. So I think this hits a mark on a lot of different places. Like I said, I think he's kind of ungoogleable, so it's kind of hard to kind of track him down. But if you are able to find this album, you know, check it out. It's definitely a really good, really well executed hip hop album, and we haven't had one of those in a while.
Awesome. On my end, I guess the next one is Lorraine, I Killed Your Dog. Going back to like changing expectation, I think with Lorraine, because you know, the last record was a huge one. Once that came out, she was touring with Animal Collective. You know, I saw her at a jazz fest, and you can kind of see this energy behind it. And you know, and I think because with that album, it was very experimental, but then you had songs that were straight bops. Like yeah. This one song where Kill Self, that it's got this 4/4 house beat, bruh. I am still, yo, any producers out there, any producers, Kate Trinata, please get at this song, because it's a point of where, you know, obviously by the name of the song, it's a little sad, a little guitar, but then this 4/4 comes in, this glorious, like, fucking, is this like, you know, I'm in love, Blondie, like, house fucking thing comes in, glorious. But the thing is, you know, again, so you, a little experimental, a little bit of a bop, you know, naturally now you get the little production money, you go full on orchestral, like, we're making hits. And what's cool about this record is she kind of did the exact opposite, but also the same. It's definitely less and more experimental at the same time, meaning this. There's absolutely no quote-unquote bops on this. But as a whole of a record, as a like continuous listen, she's definitely on her Radiohead shit, where it's just the mood. It's really well written. It's really well sequenced. You know, as opposed to kind of like saying, hey, it's more experimental. Here's my, you know, I can write bops also. It kind of all mends together, and it's one really great, like, listen to, like, from beginning to end. And I just think that, you know, to a certain extent, I won't say it's necessarily slept on, but I think because it's hard to kind of point to, per se, a single, that people aren't giving it the respect it needs to be. But, like, it's just, as a body of work, is the best, I think, just overall. Like I said, this is a really good album, and it's going to be interesting to see how she kind of moves in the future.
Word. I'll definitely check that out. The algorithm does not feed Lorraine to me, but... I'm better than the algorithm. All right, so my next one, this is another one that kind of popped up on a few different lists. Larry June and the Alchemist, The Great Escape. You know, I will say this. Larry June is not the best of rappers, but Alchemist is the best of producers.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just like Alchemist. It's like playing on a team with Michael Jordan, you know? Like, you know, like your game is going to get elevated. Like, even if you're like missing free throws, you know? And I think it's just more, this album's a little bit more of a vibe to me. You know, I think, like, I don't know. It's just like, it's something about, like, you know, when you look at the videos, cause it's almost like you have to look at, like, and they almost made a video for every track on the album. Like, if you look at the videos, and you know, they were like Mexico City, they're in Monaco, you know, like they're like, you know, like Malibu. And it's just like,
yeah,
it's
Alchemist even... Money Goes Long.
Yeah. But it's like, it's not even like they're like, oh, I'm with 20 girls, like whatever. I was like, I'm just like with like two dudes. And we're like driving, you know, Ferraris, like, you know, down Pacific Coast Highway, you know. And I think, like, I just got in a mindset where I listened to this album driving down the Pacific Coast Highway, and then I actually listened to this album like driving on the Hudson Coast Highway, like Route 202 out here in the woods. And I'm just like, I don't know, man, like sometimes albums just set a vibe, and that's what this album did to me. And it's just, you know, really great production. You know, it's not a hip hop album. I forget what my boy called this album. It's like, basically, it's an album to smoke to, you know, but I don't know, man. Like, I always found myself like coming back to this album. You know, I thought the features were pretty good. You know, the rapping is very much like almost like, you know, was it like hustle Twitter, you know, like all you got to do, man, is invest in real estate.
That's all I gotta do, you know, flip this bird, you know, long-term planning, long-term.
You know, like, and, you know, like get your business license and pay your taxes. Like, that's how I got my hustle, you know. That, I guess that's real talk, but no, I enjoy this album. And my top 10 is more, less about, like, oh, this is, like, quality music, and more of, like, where are the albums I come back to, like, time over time. You know.
No, it's. I think it's, and so I guess I'll take this and I'll go to mine. It's like, so Super Snooper is a punk band, and you know, it's not sociopolitical, it's not heavy, you know, there's no weird angle here. They're just a punk band. They're a punk band. They make songs 2 minute longs, really tight fucking songwriting, really solid hooks. I'll say maybe a little bit of Ramones. Oddly enough, I'll say a little bit of Offspring, a little bit of Green Day, you know, for the most part, it's just like, just, it's a really efficient album where maybe it's 20 minutes, tops is 20 minutes long, but it's so tight, you can just let it play incessantly, because again, it's just like, you know, 14 catchy, get in, get out quick, you know, verse, chorus, verse, outro, punk songs. And, you know, the topics are very, very, again, sociopolitical, bed bugs, mean friends. It just sounds like, you know, to a certain extent, and again, going, I think the idea of where kind of crafting an album where, you know, again, we could talk about, you know, esoteric Radiohead, where I've got this fucking synthesizer from fucking 1973, they unearthed in a fucking earthquake. You know, we recorded this album in a fucking cave somewhere in Uganda. It's like, no, it's just like, again, really well produced, really clear sounding, really hyper-focused, not a wasted minute, not a wasted note, punk album that plays well, you know, the first 15, 20 minutes. And you could kind of leave them forever loop. You could put it on the background of X Games. You could put it on the background driving fast. You could put it in the background of sports. You could go, I bet you'd have a fantastic punk show. Everybody stage diving is just for, you know, the urgency of rock music. A nice little perfect 20 minute set of songs. Can't be mad.
Nice. Cannot be mad at that at all. All right. So mine is going to be, I'm actually going to combine two of these.
Ah.
So, Little Dragon, Slugs of Love, and Say She She, Silver. So they're both kind of four to the floor acts, right? They're kind of like, you know, house music, but not really, soulful, but not really. And I started falling in love with the Little Dragon album, and then the algorithm did recommend Say She She to me. And I think the Little Dragon album, you know, it's kind of crazy when you think about it. Like, Little Dragon's been doing this for like 20 years now.
Wow.
Like, yeah. It's kind of crazy. And I will say, like, you know, obviously they had like a high period and they kind of had a low period. And I feel like this album, it's not doing anything new or different. It's just like, it's a return to form, though. It's the same form. It's the same, like, I would say, you know, formula that they've been using for the past like 20 years. It's very dancey. It's really just kind of, you know, like Yukimi Nagano has like one of the most beautiful voices in music. And it's just still there. It's preserved after 20 years. but I don't know. Like, it just kind of felt like I've been feeling a sense of nostalgia this year for like the 2010s. And, you know, like, the Blog Era podcast came out, and, like, I think now we're, like, you know, it's more than a decade when that era kind of evolved, and now we're kind of looking back. So it's kind of cool to see an artist from that era, and then also to have them come back in a way, I think, that was, like, a return to form. So definitely check out that album. And then Say She She, so this is a group of women from Brooklyn. It's basically, and you know, I've heard them called cosplay. They could be cosplay, right? Like, they could be.
Oh, it's Brooklyn. We cosplay any kind of cool niche subgenre: cooking, singing, fucking accordion.
But we've done, but it's here. Not. But to me, it's like, you know, they kind of looked at, they're basically like the 2023 version of like Nile Rodgers and Chic. And they kind of like looked at that template. They looked at like, you know, Mary Jane Girls. They looked at like, you know, like all those kind of like templates. And they just decided to do an album in like, I guess, in tribute to that world. And I think the album is dope. I think like they go in a lot of really interesting places. Like Astral Plane is kind of like a little bit more of like that like Mulholland Drive sound. But then they have like more like disco kind of like music. And I don't know, like, I kind of got enamored with this album, and the fact that it's like, you know, three females from Brooklyn, I think they're like, you know, in their 20s, it's just like really cool to me, you know, because it's just like, it's not even like, you know, I don't know, like a Sharon Jones type of thing where it's just like you're of that era and you kind of know of that era. You didn't get hot in that era, but you're hot now. This is like, oh no, like I'm studying that whole era. And this is like the sound that I want to recreate. And I think they nailed it. And awesome. It's a really impressive album to me. And, you know, it's like a really cool, like, again, like it's four to the floor. It's really cool to kind of play that after the Little Dragon album. Maybe some other like kind of housey type of albums. It kind of mixes in really well. Mixes in well, obviously, with like, you know, the last Daft Punk album. And it's just kind of cool to see somebody who's not of that era kind of like, you know, yeah, they probably went to YouTube or they like went to the record store and like listened to the records, but like they were able to kind of recreate that vibe, but updated for 2023. So definitely check them out.
And what I like, going back to the idea of cosplay, is when you kind of see them, they look normal. Like, they can easily be showing up, like, oh, I'm going to have the fucking feather boa, or I'm going to have so-and-so. They look like, oh, we're just like literally like, oh, we just came from band practice and we had this gig. We were down the block. Like, it's not, they aren't really pretentious in the way they kind of like present the music. It's just like, nah, we're just making like, you know, well-harmonized like dancey jams.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Slight gear switch. Jesus Peace So Unknown. So punk in general is having a moment. I think Stone has a punk album coming up soon also. Technically punk artists, I should say, not necessarily a punk bands. But, you know, you see it right now, you know, like fucking, you know, a couple of years ago was the Air Force Ones, now it's Doc Martens, you know. I've already, like, named the punk band on my list. You see the kind of vibe. Oh, half the rappers now were punk, quote-unquote, and I put it in the biggest quotes in the world, you know, piercings, tattoos, and I think it's kind of easy to kind of fall into that, like, let's say necessarily the like the cliched version of it, but I think it's also been a positive because, you know, as somebody who kind of still goes out, because honestly, between me and you listeners, you know, the easiest shows to kind of get easy tickets for are either punk metal shows or underground hip-hop, so that's my diet as far as going out. So I've seen this kind of scene kind of switch where generically it'd be the same kind of white bros, but it's extremely diverse. I went to a punk show a couple of weeks ago. They were a screamo band. And, you know, if you don't know necessarily screamo, is you would think it's like emo, but it's kind of not at all.
Yeah.
it's as aggressive event as any other, like, hardcore punk. But it was mainly queer kids. Like, you know, the headliner band was an outwardly gay man who, just funny footnote, has a very militant, very militant queer band called Matassine, which is basically like a queer liberation movement from, I think, the 1960s. But it's just like breeders will die. And it's fucking fantastic because fucking is the idea of where, again, you kind of listen to the kind of, you know, the world has a weird thing about it. So you expect more angry music about that. But anyway, I digress. Maybe because of what's happening in the world or whatever. It's been an outpouring of really good punk bands. The scene's getting more diverse. You know, I'll see all types of kids out there. And I wanted to kind of bring it back to Jesus Peace because it seemed that not necessarily they're a flashpoint moment, but a lot of the kids in the East Coast kind of look up to them because, you know, A, they're a diverse band, but also they're fucking heavy as fuck. Yeah. Where, you know, they have a fucking drummer who's also kind of a model and they could easily kind of tailor their shit around there. And it's like, no, they're literally like, you know, we're all punk kids who wanted to start a death metal band. And it's the idea of where they aren't necessarily a death metal band, but it's an argument where at times they're heavier than a death metal band. And it's kind of cool to kind of see them kind of like, you know, stay true to their roots, stay true to the scene. I saw them tour recently. It was a whole bunch of diverse acts. It's just like, you know, these are the kind of bands of where necessarily you don't really see them being huge. But definitely, like, there's a kid in the audience, some 15, 16-year-old stage diving, who will make a great band because they blew their mind in a live show. And
that's
once
awesome.
Again, you know, it's a great record, great heavy record. I'm not going to say listen to it all the time, but, you know, maybe, you know, had a tough day, you know, arguing with your husband, arguing with your wife. Maybe tough day at work. Maybe overtook the steroids that morning. Just go out there, fucking hit that fucking lift. You know, do them fucking arm curls, fucking do the little boxing thing, and just work the fuck out because it's hard body and, you know, props to them.
Man, you know, the crazy thing, like, you always recommend punk albums to me, and I never listen to them. Because, like, when I'm angry, I listen to, like, Andre 2000.
The thing is, you gotta know when to ride the wave, right? So it's just like, if it's like I gotta go, like, you know, talk to, like, fucking my moms or my boss, no, I can't go from... It's a little hard, you know. I'll never forget. I think it was Korn. I remember I was in the Utica stop in the subway, and I listened to something heavy. And then the girls, they kind of like tapped me on the like on the side of my leg or something. And I remember just turning around like I was about to hit her, and it was a moment because I was like, "Oh shit!" I was like, "Wrong kind of mental state here. I need to temper what I'm doing." But, you know, it depends on if you're in this state. You know, sometimes it really works well to kind of ramp up the energy. Sometimes it's the exact opposite way. But yeah, only while lifting.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, that's the beauty of music, man. Like you know. It's all things for all people, like different things for different people. Like no hate, all love. All right. So speaking of punk, my next one is actually a punk, punk band.
Yeah, Turnstile.
Who connected with a jazz band, jazz trio, to make an EP. And this is three songs. It's called New Heart Designs. It's actually a remix EP for Turnstile's 2021 album, I believe. And it's really interesting. I actually, like, you know, speaking of punk, I think, like, the one thing people don't expect about punk is, like, how melodic it is, right? And how, like, you know, I think there's a lot of melody there. There's a lot of just passion there. And I think, like, the one thing I really love about this EP is that, you know, when you kind of strip out a lot of, like, you know, kind of like the quote-unquote punk elements and replace that with jazz or replace that with kind of like what Bad Bad Not Good is doing, you kind of get to see some of these tracks or hear some of these tracks in a very different light. And obviously, like, a lot of remixes do that, but I think it's just really kind of interesting to kind of see that for a punk band. So yeah, this is like another album that I kind of, it's not even, I don't even know if it qualifies. It's only three songs. You know, like I gotta look at the rule book, you know, to see if this qualifies to be in the list.
It's an EP, you know, it's technically, you know, but,
a standard EP should have five songs. but it's a really cool reimagining of the work. And I think, like, Bad Bad Not Good, you know, I mean, they've been out here now for, I wouldn't even say, like, close to a decade or over a decade now. And they, it's just really interesting to kind of see, like, the projects that they tackle. And it's like, they almost are like, okay, cool, like, this is a challenge. You know, like, I'm going to, all right, let's do this, you know? So, I just really love this EP. It's really cool to see it. And it's really cool to actually listen to the originals to the reimaginings as well, to kind of see, like, that change. And it just, like, opens up a whole new dimension to the song.
Yeah, no, there was a, so Thurston Moore from, if you guys don't know, Sonic Youth, the main, I guess, creatives, I won't say the main creative songwriter, but let's say the head of the band. He's chopping a memoir, and he was basically talking about, it was, you know, as usual, talking about his idols and everything else. So he had always had a poignant kind of comment, which always kind of stuck with me. He's like, look, he starts talking about how basically, like, you know, he grew up in the 70s and 70s punk and XYZ. And he kind of like switched it for a second. He's like, look, I'm going to say they're the greatest musicians. He's like, a lot of them are pretty terrible. But he was like, the songwriting, though, was unfuckable. He was like, the songwriting craft was high tier. And I think that's what kind of gets slept on, where just because it's done simply doesn't mean that the songwriting isn't there. Because to be honest with you, a lot of the earworms listen to, you know, like from commercials and XYZ jingles and just basically, like, you know, suppose like Teen Spirit is literally four chords. Yeah. You know, it's the idea of where it requires this genius in songwriting and making those things kind of sing. And, you know, definitely, you know, I'm not surprised that, like, you know, giving, you know, Turnstile, where they've kind of made a more solid pop songwriting turn, and Bad Bad Not Good's chops, it was a match made in heaven.
Yeah.
On mine, I think, I'm going to save this one because I think me and Son going to end together with this one record, but I'll take a little skip to Zirha Tirza, I always mispronounce the name, Trip Nine Love. She's somebody where a couple of years ago kind of came out, you know, is almost doing like almost like a singer songwriter, but with a little bit of an R&B edge. A couple of years later, she dropped, I think after she had her first child, this almost very dusty reinterpretive version. I won't necessarily call it post punk, but moody in a very kind of listless way. But it was also a love song about to her kid. So it was just very vibey. So she kind of went from an artist that was kind of almost experimental, very vibey. And you've got this one called Trip Nine Love, where with Tirza, what it basically is it's one drum beat reused in all the tracks. Sometimes she might drop the snare. Sometimes she might drop the bass. Sometimes she might make it too loud, so it's a little fucking distorted. But that's it. So it's like one that's just kind of going continuously. You know, the guitar, piano's kind of in the same kind of like almost like smoke lounge, but not to say that it's necessarily like a chill album, because again, it could get a little aggressive. Yeah. But it's just a little great experimentation. And it actually, shit, bringing it back. I'm making all these segues. I'm ready for my fucking talk show. Bringing it back to songwriting. It's like she's got the same motherfucking beats playing over these songs, basically the same exact tempo. And she's able to reinterpret it where you listen to it and no song really repeats itself. It's all distinct. Enough where it takes you a second to realize, like, hey, wait a minute. you know, it kind of is the same beat, but doesn't hit you because it's always kind of tackling different ways. And like, what's kind of cool about it is like I said, you kind of went from over more, I won't say a maximalist artist, but somebody where you can see like an imagine a big stage show to this point where I can imagine her more than like a drum machine, you know, a pillow and an acoustic guitar. But it's kind of cool to kind of see her kind of find new ways kind of flipping it. And again, it goes back to the idea of where things unexpected but expected, where it's like she's somebody where all the trappings and all the fucking Ablettons and Pro Tools and Max with 32 gigs of memory is just a simple ass fucking, you know, YouTube trap beat and her guitar and a piano, you know, and it's just a great little fucking collection of songs.
That's cool. And it's like, I wish the algorithm recommended this album to me. I didn't even know she had albums here.
You would love this. This is definitely give it a listen. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I remember, like, you know, 2013 she had like I'm Not Dancing, which is like the same little beat but in like little synths and like distortion and just like her kind of singing. And it's kind of crazy, like you're saying this, I'm like, "Oh, like wow, like, you know, some artists when they get to a point where, you know, some artists where it's just like that's all they had." But then they get some fame and they're like, "Oh, I got a recording studio. Oh, I got a band." And then it's just like they kind of, you know, move away from, you know, kind of the sound that kind of made them who they are. And it's kind of interesting. And I don't think she's like a huge artist, but it's kind of interesting to kind of see her still maintain that vibe, you know, after, damn, almost a decade.
A decade.
And back
to your point, like, again, she's somebody where it's weird because over the records has gotten more and more stripped down, more and more insular, and it's like, again, it's cool because when I heard she has a new record, I expected some like dope beats and more upbeat stuff or yada yada yada, and no, it's just like, again, it's stuff where, and I'm not gonna diss the sound quality because it's really a professionally made album, but at the same time, it's the kind of thing when you always, you know, when you hear like a, let's say like, oh, this was PJ Harvey or this was, you know, Kurt Cobain demos, and they kind of sitting there with like a little drum machine kind of making it work, and like that's what she stripped it down to, like the essence of the essence, like on some beach house shit basically, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool hearing that turn.
Yeah. All right. So the next one for me is Mick Jenkins, The Patience. So Mick Jenkins was a rapper. I think he's from New Orleans. But he dropped an album a long time ago. I forgot the name of it, but it was like a really jazzy kind of down tempo album. Really dope. I kind of like stopped, you know, I was like, oh man, this album is great. And I kind of just like didn't, you know, follow up with him. And I discovered this album because I was looking at my top 10 and I was like, oh, there's not a lot of hip hop here. And people recommended that I listen to this to Mick Jenkins album. I have to say, like, it's a solid album. It's not as good, I think, as like some of his peers. I know like Smino put out a really good album last year, but it's a really solid album. And I think like from a production standpoint, from what he brings to the table, you know, I think he just really kind of has, from the beginning of his career, been able to like really craft a really amazing hip hop album. If you like the type of hip hop that I like, right? So great production. Great MCing, meaningful lyrics, you know, and he has some bops on here. So I would definitely say check it out, especially if you're like me and it's just like been, you know, avoided hip hop this year. I think this is a really solid hip hop album. Probably not an album I came back to like all the time, but it's definitely an album that I was kind of like, this guy, you know, is really doing big things. Definitely still not like, you know, I would say mentioned in the top tier of rap, but, you know, definitely still holding it down.
Awesome. No, yeah, for a minute. Great live artist too. Great live artist. I guess for me, the next one would be basically Janelle Monáe, Age of Innocence. I'll be honest with you. I always, going back to the idea of artists you respect, I always respected Janelle Monáe. I loved everything she was doing. I'll be honest with you, a lot of her projects, I wanted to say, let's say, left me cold. But, you know, I would admire what she was doing a lot, but it never really stayed with me. And I think to a certain extent is, and I'm not going to say what she was doing was smarter than what I expected. But I think to a certain extent, there's definitely an idea of where she was pushing paradigms forward because she had to, ultimately. You know, she's somebody where, you know, she was doing these almost rock, R&B rock operas. She had a certain image, had a certain style. She was doing guitar-based music when guitar-based music wasn't really popping. And, you know, then she kind of pivoted where she kind of claimed her queerness. So she's doing like these not necessarily anthems per se, but it's a lot of it's visual. It's a lot about kind of reclaiming her sexuality as a Black woman. And I think that for me, it's almost like when, and again, this is not her, this is all me. When I would listen to her stuff, I would almost put my intellectual brain on as opposed to kind of judging it for a song. Like if it was just like XYZ, but you know, when I first heard about Janelle Monáe, it was like, oh my God, the greatest artist ever, Prince co-signs her. So it's always been in that part of my brain where I'm judging her almost like a jazz, like a Esperanza Spalding.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like, you know, and then the thing is, what's kind of cool about Age of Innocence is the fact of where, again, you know, I'm expecting to see this look, I guess maybe, you know, this beach album, because a lot of it was less like her on the beach with all these girls, and I expect a certain sound, and I expect to be a whole thing. Maybe if the last album was about her queer sexuality, maybe this one's about Black girl joy and blah, blah. And then, so, you know, I put it on, and then I did things, and I just realized that it was just playing in the background, and it was just jams. It was extremely well sequenced. It was, you know, you might have a little bit of Afrobeats here, you might have a little bit more R&B, you might have something a little bit more housey. It almost reminded me a lot of the Beyonce album, not necessarily in the sound, but in the fact of where it's a perfect play, where you play it once, you can let it play again, and it's just kind of everything kind of melds together, and it's well sequenced, and the songs bleed into each other, even though they're not necessarily the same kind of song, or even necessarily the same kind of genre, even though obviously Beyonce was more house, but there's different levels of dance music. Some of it was a little bit more house, a little more expressible hyperpop. Same thing here, where for a long player dealing with a lot of different sounds, it's very cohesive, and it's just again really, really well made. Where it kind of reminds me of kind of how I shouted out the Stupor album before, that punk album. Same thing, where it's just a perfectly well crafted album, suite of songs, and something where, you know, like if I'm doing any kind of house, like the biggest, you know, I remember when we talked about like Calvin Harris Funk Waves, and it kind of hits the same exact thing where, yeah, even though it was a little bit later, you know, this is a little bit later for the barbecue season, it's a perfect barbecue album.
Wow, it's like the Black woman funk wave bounces.
Reclaiming it from the white man.
Yeah, because I you know, it's one of those things where, and this album was like, did not make my top 10, and it was borderline for me. And, you know, it wasn't an album I consistently came back to. But like you said, it's a well-made album. I think that, you know, Janelle Monáe is just always been, you know, just a very creative artist, and it's not just about the individual songs, it's about the vibe that she's trying to set. And I think it, like every album, like generally has a theme to it. Just going back to her, some of her like, you know, paranoid android work or whatever arc android work, you know. I think this album is best appreciated at a beach, at like a pool.
agreed.
I fell in love with this album, you know, driving through the desert in a convertible, not a flex. And I was just like, this album is setting the mood perfectly, right? And I think like when you look at the videos, when you look at like the album cover, when you look at like, you know, all of the press materials, that's the mood that she wants to set. She's like, oh no, like this is a party. This is like a, you know, this is, you know, a pool party that might be orgy because we out here.
Da-da-da.
You know, so I really truly admire this album. You know, it's on the borderline for me, and it's you know, it's just Janelle Monáe is like a very special artist to me. So I can't be mad at the project at all.
Yeah, no. Again, it's something where for me, like I said, I think that, not to say I got it finally, but it's just cool, you know, for various other ways, you know, playing it cool, taking her clothes off, you know, having a little bit of, you know, it's her Hennessy album, and I'm not mad at her Hennessy album.
All right. Wait, are we...
Sampha.
Oh, yeah. I got thrown off. So Sampha Lahai is on my list. So this is Sampha's second album, and it's really interesting because one of the things I loved about this album is that it just doesn't sound like anything else. Like, it feels like its own genre of music. And it's actually kind of interesting. It almost feels like I would play this actually kind of back-to-back maybe with the Andre 3000 album. It's like, you know, Samples of Voice is very calming. It's very atmospheric. And it's just like very, I don't know. Like, it's just, there's just something about the production that I thought was just like really interesting. And, you know, like, Sampha is like a very interesting artist. Like, he kind of pops up on your, you know, favorite artist track, and then he kind of disappears. And then when they can't get Sampha, they get Giveon.
I've definitely heard a James Blake doing a Sampha impression also. Apparently he could, he's a white man of all trades,
you know? So, but I think this album to me is just like, it's just very, very well put together. And it's just like, I don't know, like, I always kind of came back to it in the same way I think I came back to the Andre album. It just like felt like something that was just like truly unique. And it was also felt like something where I needed to like listen. I need to like be invested in, you know, like I couldn't listen in the background. I just kind of felt like I always needed to like pay attention. So yeah, and it's just, the production is just stellar on it. This album, I'm kind of speechless because like, it's like a weird thing where it's like, I don't know all the words to all the songs. It's not one of those albums where it's like, oh man, like, cause there's no bops, like quote unquote bops on here. Right. Like it's just very, Sega mood, atmospheric, things like that. And yeah, it's just like a really splendid piece of work.
Yeah, no, it's, I think, yeah, for me, it's also the idea of where, because again, he's somebody where I want to say he's known for morose stuff, but, you know, very serious albums, very XYZ. There's, you know, with this album, what kind of got me was the fact that it felt almost very joyous. It's very kind of like amped up. It's very like I think it's a song called Don't Go Back. It's got almost like a little drum beat, like drum and bass bit break towards the end. It's just, he's just really working on a high level. And I think that it was interesting because I didn't say that he ever disappeared, but he definitely became the hook man for a couple of years where he would just show up, you know, in a Drake song or XYZ. And I'm pretty sure that kept his pockets really well fed. But this record is just kind of shows you like what he can do. And, you know, he was playing like fucking, you know, Tiny Desk, and he's out there playing piano and doing everything else. And it's the idea of where, you know, it's just kind of cool to kind of forget how just talented he is as an individual, as a songwriter, as a singer. So it's cool kind of hearing him back. And like I said, it's something where, and it's been, and we discussed it before, I kind of made mention, it's been a weird year because there's been a lot, not necessarily anything really mind-blowing, but a lot of people have stepped up and said, hey, I am fucking dope and I'm still doing dope music.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like Sampha's one of those dudes.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, actually.
Yeah. And I guess we'll cap it off because we both have this. Not necessarily, I don't think it's our top, like the top record of the year for either one of us, but definitely a force to reckon with. Eve's Tumor. I mean, what's more to say? You know, Eve's Tumor put me on because I think early on he was a Warp artist. He was doing experimental, like techno electronic music. I was like, oh, this is really cool. He's got this dark imagery that looks really gothy. I was like, this guy's dope. And then, you know, a couple of years later, he drops a new record. I'm like, yeah, they put it on. It's going to sound like Evil fucking Flying Lotus. And no, it was, shit was pure 70s David Bowie. And, you know, mind blowing, you know, became a huge fan. Me and someone went to see him live. Great show.
Great show.
And then kind of did it again. And it's like, not even the fact of where it would have been easy for him to do a rock album. It's almost like he's kind of reinventing rock music. If the first record was like late 70s, this is like, you know, I mean, if the first record was early 70s, I should say, this is definitely late 70s, early 80s. It's just him. The thing is, who would have thought that A, you would still have high quality rock music in 2023,
yeah,
and B, who thought it would have been like basically a techno producer who grew up in gospel music?
yeah. Like I really forgot this album existed, unfortunately, but I just really love this, like their evolution, and yeah, it's definitely a little bit more on the rock sound. It's definitely a little bit more, I wouldn't say like harder hitting, but it just kind of feels like it's an evolution of what they're trying to do in the first album. I don't know, man. Like, it's just like, it's hard for me to like say like, oh man, what's like a great rock record, outside of Yves Timmer. Like, I just feel like the whole genre is a little devoid of this type of artistry. And I'm just really always impressed whenever they drop a track. So, you know, for me, it's just kind of like, it's almost like, I don't even know how to say this. It's almost like, I kind of wish that, the people who are kind of listening to like the Uzi Verts or listening to like, you know, like, you know, like Lil Yachty, like had their producer, like things like that, like will actually listen to the source material almost, you know, cause
yeah, no, agreed. Like it's and like the interesting thing about it is the idea of where he's really, they're really putting like rock on their back. And like I said, who's like the most I can think of is the only record I can think that was relatively widely praised was Boy Genius as far as a rock record is concerned. And even then, that's more singer-songwriter, indie, rocky. There's times you can even make an argument it's almost borderline alt-country. So it's like, no, they're trying to make like rock music. They're trying to make music where it's like, you know, you might do a little cocaine on the side. It might be a little bit sex in the bathroom. You know, somebody might throw up on the guitar. You know, there might be, you know, driving really fast on the highway. You know, they're trying to like again, you could tell there's a love of the art form, and he's really there to really trying to like put something into it. And like again, for the most part, it's just like you said, it's like who I have this. There is no rock bingo card.
Who and the sad thing is, I'm sorry, that Boy Genius album was mid.
Yeah, it's bruh, it's and but again, but that goes to the idea of where, because I remember, so I think it was during Coachella when they played, and you know. Obviously, you know, a lot of people kind of know if you play like songs live, you get a little more energy, play a little bit more upbeat. So that's when I was like, all right, I could kind of almost see it. You see all the signifiers, they had huge stage lights, they all have fucking guitars, they're all plugged in, they're all amplified. But at the end of the day, is it hitting you? Like, for the most part, it's just, and again, this is no diss to what they're doing. I think what they're doing is great, actually. I love Boy Genius to a certain extent, but it's not what I would call rock music. What you know, like what, like nobody's gonna run to Guitar Center to go buy a guitar because they heard a Boy Genius song. That said, Yves Timmer, they will absolutely run to go get a guitar on some, like, I'm gonna fuck with this. I could make dope shit out of this. And you know, it's hard to find a record like that nowadays.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just remembering that show and the guitarist like suddenly end up on the balcony. On some like David Copperfield shit. You know, and I'm just like, whoa, and he's just like shredding the guitar. And I'm just like, we need more of that, man. We need more of that. So
yeah, no, again, it's and you know, there's definitely arguments to be made of where music changes, time marches on, but you know, definitely rock and roll is a very viable art form, I think, and it just takes people to kind of deconstruct them. I think, you know, Yves Timmer, what they were doing, where they're like, hey, I see this genre, I fuck with it hard, I'm doing this music, electronica shit, I could fix this, we can fix this, we have the technology, and I think we're all blessed because of it. So, you know, God bless them.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I think we're going to stop here. You know, yeah. I think we might have one or two more episodes. You know, we'll see how this works out. But obviously, you know, no matter what, you will get, you know, I always hear about things like, you know, the Academy Awards, the Oscars. We all know that what's hot in the streets will get you, you know, the real nitty gritty, the awards where people sit there and they hold those fucking trophies tight. You know, in the middle of their Hollywood divorces, you know what I'm saying? In that cold mansion, they're like, look, at least I have a Stoney and Reggie. Reggie and Stoney.
The Reggie and Stoneys are coming.
You know, coming soon. So
Coming soon.
But yeah, no, you know, as usual, thanks for listening. No, thanks for listening. Wow. Thanks for listening. What am I saying? Yeah, thanks for listening. Again, I think Reggie and Stone had a little bit of too much of the, you know, clink clank.
We're trying to get in before Dry January.
You know what I'm saying? To try to leave the alcohol behind in 2003, only to pick it up pretty promptly again in 2024. But you know, as usual, we love y'all. You know, stay safe, stay woke, not in the white man sense. You know what I mean out there? And you know, peace. We'll see y'all next week.